The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. There always is on Monday. Great to be back after another special weekend. My father had the special Sabbath edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And if you look on YouTube right now, the number of views, I think, is up at 8,300. And there was several thousand that watched it live. I think between YouTube and then the audio stream at the websites, also our Facebook feed, I think altogether we had about 3,000 connections at the peak on Saturday during the live broadcast. So lots of people have watched it since on replay. But that's a pretty good size live audience from around the world for this little flock that is God's church, and of course all the others that joined us for that special presentation, co-workers, donors, trumpet readers, and of course just listeners to this program. So 3,000 connections, and who knows how many of those connections provided the message for 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 people. I know we had quite a few listening in on 2 or 3 connections here at Edstone. So those are some encouraging numbers. And in fact, the Friday program, the one we did last week, the last of the week, How Junk Science Shuts Down the World, that one's now sitting at 4,000 views as well. So we've definitely seen a noticeable increase in viewers. As I mentioned there at the top of the show on Saturday, that has been one positive in this lockdown mania, is that more people are out there, I think, searching for the truth. I thought I'd begin the program with a little bit more in the way of feedback coming from you listeners. This one here says, being old, this is from New Zealand, being old, it took a while to get my act together, but yes, I did. Taking notes, received your Sabbath messages. What a blessing, she writes. Another one here says, I would like to thank the entire staff and everyone for their involvement with the message being broadcast from Oklahoma. For me, it was a much-needed message. I appreciated it very much. And then listen to this one. This comes from Nigeria. It says, God bless you. Real good and the work. Am highly lifted spiritually, like more than ever. He says, I long to be part of Sabbath worship. And the COVID-19 has made it possible for me to feed live outside daily TD and the Key of David programs. I think he means there it makes it possible for him to be fed live at church, so to speak, even in addition to the daily TDs and the weekly Key of David program. So that's someone in the middle of Nigeria who's very appreciative of being able to tune in to that special Sabbath message. Another one here says, thank you for the special message last Sabbath and the daily messages. What a wonderful gift to have Mr. Gerald Flurry do a special trumpet radio this Sabbath. It says, just like World War II, when the king spoke to the British nation, we are in a war and God had the king speak to his nation. It'll be amazing to see how God will further his work during these days. Thank you for all your hard work, or for all the hard work everyone is doing to produce all these programs for us and the entire world. That comes from British Columbia over in Canada. And then this last one here, it says, I wanted to send an email to thank you and your father for the live message this morning, the update of the increased activity at thetrumpet.com, the trumpet brief, and other resources the work provides was really encouraging. It's so easy to have a negative mindset toward all that's happening with the coronavirus, to think about how it must be hindering the work, keeping us from the PAX and moving forward with the building in Jerusalem. He says, but I think that's what Satan wants us to think. He wants us to be negative and discouraged. But when you remember that the God of Elijah is in the middle of it all, directing what is happening with those fiery chariots from Zechariah 6, it's much easier to see that there really are a lot of positives coming from this too. So that's something that we'll try to emphasize quite a bit more in the weeks ahead, depending upon how long this crisis persists. There are some positives to take away from that. Well, last week on, I think, the last couple of programs in the week, I emphasized the experts and how that they were revising some of their predictions. I also talked about just the dreadful coverage, the news coverage. There was a report last week here in the UK, this 21-year-old girl who died, and right away, there was a mistake made saying that she died of COVID-19, and that was the headline. I mean, that was out front. Sky News, they ran with it. And the reporter said, oh, what a trial this must be for the family, for the mother. And then we come to find out, and of course, this wasn't publicized as much, but we find out later that this young lady didn't die from coronavirus at all. It was some other cause. But they're searching far and wide, in case you haven't noticed. They're searching far and wide to find a young person that dies of this disease. Because they know that the overwhelming majority are older and they have underlying health conditions. So if you look at some of the reports, the ones they really zero in on, if they can find one who's young and who's healthy, well, that just really makes their narrative take off. That this is like the Spanish flu of 1918. Everyone's in danger. If you get this virus, you will most likely die. That's really the takeaway that they want for you to get. Now, I don't want to say it's been that way across the board. There's some honest reporting. We'll play some clips because even some of the ones that were crying wolf at the very beginning, even they're beginning to change their tune as they see the mortality rate in decline. And they see that just like with influenza, the ones who are at danger here, the ones who are most vulnerable, are the older, elderly people or the ones with health problems to begin with. I mentioned that Ferguson imperial model and how he's come down to 20,000. There's a report here, I think, from Peter Hitchens that says Ferguson now estimates 5,600 deaths in the UK. It's plummeting. Now, I was picking on Sky News a little bit, and last week, too. They had a pretty good report here. Now, they do base some of this report on Ferguson's 20,000 figure, so that's not quite right. But at least in this report, there is some honesty, and there's also some good comparisons, like, okay, this is what they're projecting. This is how many would have died anyway because of pre-existing conditions. And this is how many we lose for the flu, influenza. I think that figure actually might be a little bit low, but it's talking here about the difficulty now of the transition back to reopening the British economy. Here is a Sky News report from Friday. This is clip one.
Government advisers predict 20,000 people will die with coronavirus in the UK, even with the social distancing and shielding of vulnerable groups. Analysis of the first 386 deaths in the UK has shown that 98% had underlying health conditions. The majority were elderly, with the oldest being 105. What we don't know for sure is how many died because of the virus. Every year, 600,000 people in the UK die. That's 1,644 deaths every day. And most of those would be elderly or in poor health. So there's an overlap between the background mortality and those dying during the epidemic. So let's take those 20,000 predicted deaths from coronavirus. Now, one of the government's key advisers hazarded a guess this week that between half and two-thirds of those dying would probably have done so soon anyway. So do the maths and deduct those from the predicted deaths, and you're left with somewhere between 6,667 and 10,000 deaths that can be attributed directly to the virus. Statisticians call those excess deaths. And by way of comparison, regular seasonal flu causes 8,000 excess deaths a year, so not dissimilar. There's no doubt that social distancing will save many lives, but the economic shutdown also has a human cost. The financial crash of 2008 resulted in unemployment increasing to 212 million across the world. The resulting poverty and poor health caused an estimated 260,000 additional cancer deaths and 10,000 additional suicides. Now, every death is, of course, a tragedy. And right now, we're staying at home to prevent the NHS from being catastrophically overwhelmed by the virus. But once we're over the peak and cases begin to fall, the government will have to balance the lives saved through social distancing with the lives lost by prolonging the economic pain.
And just watching that again, I saw it last night, but in seeing it again, it is easy for me to take a position and to be quite critical of this irrational action or this deranged course that we're on, or as we covered last week, the erosion of freedom and liberty. I'll come to that in just a second. But you can just listening to that one report, you can see the challenges that world leaders are grappling with. There are no easy solutions. And here they're trying to balance. Okay, there's a human cost to the economic shutdown. So when do we transition back? Right now, the prime minister in the UK is sounding like all through April, perhaps May, if you can believe it. And you just saw the figures there. He mentioned it's comparable to the flu. And this has never, ever happened. It's never happened for influenza. Not even the worst of seasons. But here we are. Here we are. 98% of the deaths here in the UK. Elderly with underlying health conditions. And so when you factor it in or add it to, and notice how he mentions the expert that hazarded a guess, that's Ferguson. His reputation's still intact. You know, if you read the first line of his report, and Sam even mentioned this last week, this is the report that the UK government and the US government relied upon to trigger this mass hysteria, this panic the world over, a total and complete lockdown, a la China, the Chinese communist state. And this little report that Ferguson put together with his Imperial College of London team, it's just a flimsy little 20-page document. I think half of it has a few charts. There's hardly even anything in it, except that you're going to die if you don't do anything. And then if you do a little bit, well, not quite as many will die. But if you have a total lockdown, we really have no choice but to do what China did. If you do that, you're still going to lose 20,000 here in the UK. That's a good option. Remember? That's a good option. That's how the BBC reported it. Now, he's been proven already to be spectacularly wrong. And yet his reputation's still intact. They're still citing him on Sky News reports. It is unbelievable. There is nothing that an expert can do or say to ruin his career. Has Dr. Tedros, has he ruined his career? 3.4%. No, they just kind of revise it on the fly, and then they get invited right back on the news shows. Here's Fauci coming in front of the cameras yesterday, 100,000 to 200,000. Well, he's bringing down the figures as well. Didn't he say it was 10 times as lethal? 10 times as lethal as the flu. Well, if we're losing 40,000 to 70,000 per season to influenza, 10 times that must be 400,000 to 700,000. That's what he said just 2 weeks ago. Oh, now it's 100 or maybe 100 to 200,000. Okay, and no one points it out. It's big blaring headline still. It could be 200,000. And then you see the comments on social media. Oh, look at these idiots that say this is comparable to a flu. 200,000, and it hasn't even happened yet. We're nowhere near it. We're like at 1 or 2%. And the mob on social media. You see these idiots saying it's similar to the flu? They don't know their science. They don't know how to do basic math. Well, Britain, besides the death rate plummeting, you've got just a few voices that are concerned now. A few more, perhaps thanks to Peter Hitchens. And a couple others that are very concerned about this power grab, about how a prime minister can basically use a news conference to impose these medieval-like restrictions, curfews, house arrest orders, just right in front of the television camera. Peter Hitchens, he wrote in his column yesterday that, well, he referred back to this Times piece by this former Supreme Court Justice, Lord Sumption. And Hitchens says that, you know, if we were living in normal times, what this former Supreme Court Justice wrote in the Times of London a few days ago, it would be getting headlines all over the country. As it happens, it was on page 54 of the Times last week. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. I forget the day. Page 54. And what did this Supreme Court justice have to say? Well, we're moving in the direction of a police state. But that's just, you know, that's kind of ho-hum these days. He talked about the Prime Minister's announcement of the lockdown. That was just a week ago. And he refers to that press conference and say it wasn't even a press conference. He just got in front of the camera, spoke for 3 minutes, and then we were under lockdown. It was effective immediately, said Prime Minister Johnson. And there was no lawful backing. That announcement wasn't grounded in constitutional law. It hadn't even worked its way through Parliament yet. That came a few days later. And then, of course, once it gets there, it's just a rubber stamp. Just like the Congressional Act on Friday. Well, we got to move this $2 trillion bill through. The one in America, I mean. Well, what about what's in it? Never mind what's in it. It's a crisis. It's a crisis. Just move it through. You don't want to get in the way of this. Well, that's the way it was with Parliament last week. This former Supreme Court Justice, he says, however, in this press conference, Boris Johnson purported to place most citizens under virtual house arrest through the terms of a press conference. And a statement on the government website said to have immediate effect. These pronouncements are no doubt valuable as advice, even strong advice, but under our Constitution, neither has the slightest legal effect without statutory authority. It says the ordinary rule is that a person may not be detained or deprived of his liberty without specific statutory authority. In other words, if you're gonna impose these kinds of restrictions or regulations, it's got to be grounded in law. It's got to be according to the law, right? It says, in the present national mood, the Prime Minister's orders will probably have strong public support and people will be inclined to comply, whether they are binding or not. Yet we are entitled to wonder what kind of society we have become when an official can give orders and expect to be obeyed without any apparent legal basis? Simply because it's necessary? He says here, finally, these are not just technicalities. There's a difference between law and official instructions. It is the difference between a democracy and a police state. This is in the Times of London last week, page 54. Most people didn't even probably get that far. What we're talking about is the difference between a democracy and a police state. Liberty and the rule of law are surely worth something, even in the face of a pandemic. Now, again, a precious few others have made this same point. At a time of crisis, that's when we need to lean on the Constitution, not suspend it. And yet, that's exactly what we see happening. Now, as someone in God's family, in God's church, I'm not suggesting here to show disrespect toward authority or toward the higher powers, as Romans 12 says. I mean, God's behind these events in some form or fashion. He can, you know, flick someone out of the way if he chooses to. But I'm just making a point about the erosion of constitutional law in both the United States and the UK. And, you know, for all their faults, they are democracies or a republic in the case of the U.S. The Telegraph, Tim Stanley, he says, don't panic and don't surrender your freedoms. See, there's a balance. There's a balance here. There's a crisis going on. Okay. I mean, now we don't want to panic. And we certainly don't want to surrender our freedoms. We don't want to undermine the supreme law of the land. Not at this time, not ever. Well, he talks about just how most people have been happy to give up their civil liberties to help beat this disease. And Stanley said, I tend to agree with him as long as we can all agree that this should be temporary. This better be temporary, right? Stanley writes this, I am alarmed that powers of arrest and detention have been dramatically strengthened, that new jury trials have been suspended, that prisoners are now forced to spend up to 23 hours a day in their cells and are banned from seeing friends and family, that parole board hearings have been canceled. Maybe all this is necessary and justifiable, but we've got to question it, and we must stay on guard against Big Brother. How far we are willing to go to protect human rights is just as important a test of a nation's character as what we will do to protect human life. So we have all these extreme measures to protect human life. Governor Cuomo says, if we can just save one, it's worth it. Well, how far are we willing to go to protect human rights? The rights of human beings in the UK, in the United States. The Telegraph had another article. I can't help but feel chilled by the police's zeal for enforcing lockdown. At Salisbury Review, it says, selling our birthright for COVID-19. So there's a few more stories now. Peter Hitchens isn't entirely on an island by himself. He was the heretic last week for speaking out. And he did it again this weekend, referring back to this Supreme Court justice, this former Supreme Court justice, saying, look, there's a difference here. It's the difference between democracy and a police state. Speaking of the Hitchens at the Mail Online, notice what he says here. Perhaps we will emulate the French or Italian states, which have returned to their despotic origins and reduced their populations to a sort of cowering serfdom, barely able to step into the street. So again, if you know a little bit about history and you see this happening, and it's one thing for it to happen in France or Northern Italy or even Spain, but as Hitchens brings out, I mean, this really just flies in the face of the Magna Carta, habeas corpus, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. He says here, I wonder whether there might be restrictions on what can be said and published. How far does this go? Where does it stop? And then listen to this. How many people, he's evidently on board with what we're talking about here. Two programs last week on Neil Ferguson, the Imperial College scholar. He says, Professor Neil Ferguson was one of those largely responsible for the original panic. Where have you heard this? Except here. Sky News is still citing him as an expert. He's the one largely responsible for the original panic. Hitchens says, he or others from Imperial College have twice revised this terrifying prophecy, first to fewer than 20,000, and then on Friday to 5,700. It just keeps going down. And he keeps getting invited into the government and media. He says intensive care units will probably cope, and he conceded a point made by critics of the panic policy that two-thirds of people who die from coronavirus in the next 9 months would most likely have died this year from other causes. They were on their deathbed, in other words. Even the Sky News report brought that out, 98%. It says, if the government do decide to release us from mass arrest, they will say, as Professor Ferguson is doing, see, he's out there now taking credit. And he says the government's going to follow. The government's going to follow in his steps. It says that this is because their repressive economy wrecking measures worked. So get ready for it. When we come through this, when the dust finally settles, when they see that the numbers are far lower than what they were predicting, they're going to say, see, the police state worked. This is how you get things done. Hey, maybe we should think of this for climate change or some other religion that they're obsessed with. Hitchens says any government using the same pretext can repeatedly put us through this misery, impoverishment, and confinement. In the end, like the peoples of other despotisms, we will be grateful to be allowed out at all. See, we'll just be very thankful. Well, thank you. Thank you. We can go outside. It says here, listen to this example. As things stand, Johnson's government is like a doctor confronted with a patient suffering from pneumonia. This is serious, says the doctor. I've never seen anything like this. Unless I act radically, you will die terribly. He then proposes to treat the pneumonia by amputating the patient's left leg, saying this method has been used successfully in China. The trusting patient agrees. The patient eventually recovers from pneumonia, as he would have done anyway. The doctor proclaims that his treatment, though undoubtedly painful and radical, was a great success. But the patient now has only one leg and a very large hospital bill, which he cannot afford to pay. That's a pretty vivid example of what's happening. We're working on an article right now for the next Trumpet magazine. The cure is killing us. The cure is killing us, to use that example that he just used there. Here you have all these governments amputating the leg for pneumonia. And as I say, when you see it happen in Germany or Italy, that's one thing. But in the United States of America, in the United Kingdom, in Great Britain, when we come back, we'll jump across the pond and bring you the very latest for what's happening in the United States regarding this crisis. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can submit feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, President Trump had indicated last week that he was hoping that perhaps he could dial it way back as early as April 12th, just a couple, 3 weeks away. And of course, the army of experts, they immediately rushed to advise him, don't you do it. Don't you dare do it. Look, we're living in a crisis. This is a pandemic. People are dying. And of course, people are dying. People are dying every day. Of coronavirus, of influenza, tuberculosis, lung infections. Every single day it happens. How concerned, once this dies down, how concerned do you suppose the major media, the Democrat media complex, how concerned will they be about infectious disease? As soon as this is over, as soon as people stop staying glued to their computer screens, oh, it's up to 34,000. In the United States, it's 2,000 now. It's gone to 2,000. And any time that they can, if it doubles over the course of 2 days, they want you to know that it's going to be doubling for the next 2 days and 2 days after that and 2 days after that. Really, on into the future, we don't know when it's going to end. It's just exponentially growing. That's the way it's covered. Those are the way they manipulate the headlines. So he announces April 12th, and then you've got the army of experts heading for the TV cameras. There's still 100,000 to 200,000 are going to die from this. And so the president pushes it back, caves into that relentless pressure. Coming from the Democrat media complex, they want this to go on until November. The higher the death toll and the lower the stock market, the better their chances politically. So he caves in. And it's in large part because of what his team of experts say. It just simply has to be done. It must be done. This is what Dr. Fauci said on one of the Sunday shows yesterday, clip two.
But the decision to prolong, not prolong, but to extend this mitigation process until the end of April, I think, was a wise and prudent decision. Dr. Birx and I spent a considerable amount of time going over all the data, why we felt this was a best choice of us, and the president accepted it. So
Dr. Birx and him also went, they spent a good bit of time going through Neil Ferguson's report as well, the Imperial model. Remember the weekend of March 14th and 15th? That was pretty dramatic. the dramatic changes, the earth-shaking changes, decisions, policies that came out from that weekend as you had these two task force in Washington, in London, poring over this flimsy little report. It makes me think of the Steele dossier. Just, you know, 10, 15, 20 pages full of all these outrageous claims. And it just impacts the entire government adversely. In the case of Steele, of course, it triggered all of this unlawful and unconstitutional activity and behavior. Well, we've got to do it. It's a crisis. After all, we've got a president who may be compromised. So we need to spy on U.S. citizens. We're justified, see? You see how it works? You see what it takes for us to suspend constitutional norms? It doesn't take much these days, does it? And you can just look, you can just extrapolate this out on a little bit further and see how that it's unsustainable. We're finished. We are finished, but for God's intervention, however long God wants the resurgence to go on, for the work's sake, for what this church is doing, this is what's uppermost in God's mind. But this world is a mess. You heard the Sky News report at the top of the show. Look at the problems our leaders are grappling with. You feel for them because they don't know the way out. They don't have the solutions. No, they've got all these forces just pushing them, saying, look, expand the power of government. Increase the size of government. That'll fix this. And of course, it just keeps making it worse. So here's the expert going on TV yesterday. It's 100,000 or 200,000. We can't relax. We've got to keep these strong restrictions in place. We're talking about 200,000 people dying. Fauci had this statement in the New England Journal of Medicine last week. This didn't get any coverage because here is Fauci backtracking, just like Neil Ferguson did. They both did it last week. So what did they see? And if the experts are backtracking, if the experts are quickly in rapid retreat, where are the course corrections? Where are the politicians coming forward saying, you know what? Look, I'm going to just be straight with you people. We got it wrong. And so we're going to stop this. We're going to correct this. You don't see that. We are digging in our heels for the long haul here in the UK, in the United States as well. All the way through April, at least for the U.S., maybe all the way through May. I think there was a U.K. official that said through June. So 3 more months of this. You begin to wonder how much the people will even put up with it after a couple more weeks. They're already a little discontented in northern Italy. And Italy has quite a few more police officers than the U.K. has. Anyway, that's an aside, I suppose. Listen to this from the New England Journal. This is Dr. Fauci, the expert. He said, if one assumes that the number of asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic cases, he's talking about COVID-19, is several times as high as the number of reported cases. So here he's bringing up what we've been saying for the last 2 weeks. You have this tiny, tiny, tiny little circle of actual reported cases, people who are tested positive for COVID-19. And did you know that of all the people who are tested, the United States is in the midst of a massive testing program, only 16% test positive. And then of that 16%, there's, of course, then the tiny percentage that dies. Dr. Tedros said 3.4%. Now, you compare that to influenza, and it's 0.1%. So here he uses the estimated cases of influenza, and he figures out this percentage in order to tell you the flu, it's not so bad. Don't worry about the flu. I know it's highly contagious. I know that you can get, you know, pretty down and out for a few days with it, but it's not very dangerous. Well, tell that to the people by the thousands who are dying every year because of influenza. 40 to 70,000 in the United States, 17,000 in the UK, 290,000 to 610 or 20,000 worldwide. That's an infectious disease. Well, he said, Dr. Fauci did, if we assume that there's all these mild cases out there, then the case fatality rate may be, listen to this, the case fatality rate may be considerably less than 1%. Now, 1% is 10 times as lethal as 0.1%. So here is Dr. Fauci, the same man who on March 11th said the fatality rate of this virus, it's 10 times worse than the flu. And how long? How much? I think the date on this is March 26th. So 15 days later, he says, you know, we're getting more evidence, and it could be that the fatality rate is considerably less than 1%. He said, this suggests that the overall clinical consequences of COVID-19 may ultimately be more akin to those of a severe seasonal influenza or a pandemic influenza. But here, this is coming out right at about the time when President Trump says, you know what? We can't go on like this forever. This is going to destroy our economy. Americans want to go back to work. I envision maybe a miracle for Easter, April 12th. We're back to work. Don't you do it, say the experts. And so even after publishing this, he rushes to the cameras and says, you know, we still could lose 200,000 Americans. There's just a lot we don't know here. These people are constantly playing with the numbers. You can take these numbers and say whatever you want. That's the truth of it. At least we're down from 3.4% to considerably less than 1%. Why isn't that making headlines? Why aren't they running with that at the Washington Post or CNN or the New York Times? If they really care about the public, listen to Sanjay Gupta. He's the one that started it. He started the pandemic, the hysteria part of it. He comes on CNN March 9th. Look, we're going to start declaring this a pandemic in all of our reports. I know the World Health Organization hasn't done it yet. I know the CDC hasn't done it yet. But listen, this is serious. We've got some studies from China. We've got some studies from China that tell us that 5% of the people that contract this disease are going to be seriously, critically ill. And perhaps they could die. So we're going to go with pandemic from now on. Well, listen to what Mr. Gupta said on Friday, just last week, clip 9.
The vast majority of people, even if you're elderly, aren't going to need hospitalization. The vast majority are going to recover. The vast majority are not going to die.
Imagine if he would have said that in his March 9th declaration. It's a pandemic. This is serious. Spreading around the globe, which it was. It is highly contagious. There's no doubt about it. But if you're looking for some balanced reporting, If you're trying to prevent a mass panic, then say, hey, say this on March 9th. How about that? It's contagious, but the vast majority of people, even if they are elderly, aren't going to need hospitalization. Forget about it being life-threatening. Even the vast majority of elderly people that get this disease, they won't need to go to the hospital. That's quite an astounding statement coming from Sanjay Gupta, of all people. Well, the hysteria continues because you've got the Democrat media complex. Never mind what Gupta said. Never mind what Fauci wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine. Never mind what Neil Ferguson said in his testimony last week and a couple of interviews here in the UK. The US media didn't care about that, by the way. They don't care about any of this. Go back and correct the record. Considering these experts, they started this wildfire. Should we go back and correct the records? Should we go back to root causes and say, hey, how did this happen? No, they want the pandemonium. This helps them. It helps their ratings and it helps them politically. So they just continue right on. Nancy Pelosi gets up in front of the camera yesterday. She tells Jake Tapper, President Trump's killing people. He is responsible for deaths. He's costing American lives because of his policies. And of course, she's not challenged. But there was one reporter that, to his credit, Joe Biden pushed back a little bit with Chuck Todd. Does the president have blood on his hands? Well, I wouldn't say that, Mr. Todd. That's what Mr. Todd wants him to say. So they won't stop with it. They're going to use it. You can't let a crisis go to waste. You have to use this to destroy President Trump. Friday, they passed this bill through Congress. $2.2 trillion. They called it the CARES Act, you know, because they care about people. $2.2 trillion, this monstrosity of a bill that everybody accepted. You just go along with it. These are not normal times. If Prime Minister Johnson gets on TV and says, there's a total lockdown as of tonight, I declare it, and nothing even has gone through Parliament yet, well, when and if it does get around to Parliament, you just nod in approval. Everyone say aye together. Aye. Oh, the ayes have it for sure. Any nays? No nays. The Senate voted for this monstrosity 96-0. Not one person protested. Then it works its way to the House of Representatives. Well, initially, Nancy Pelosi, she held it up because she wanted to put the new Green Deal into it. So she held it up for about a week, and the press, they were fine with that. A few Republicans grumbled about it. Then they got that sorted out. Then they finally came to an agreement. Then they get to the House on Friday. And this poor congressman, Thomas Massie is his name, he made the mistake of momentarily delaying the vote because he insisted that all of us in the House get together and vote on this. We've got to be present and make sure our vote is counted and make sure our vote is on the record. Nancy Pelosi didn't want that to happen, though, because she, well, I mean, for one, it's too dangerous. It's too dangerous to meet in a room with more than 10 people. We're under lockdown. So we just want to give a, whatever you call it, a voice vote. And Massie, to his credit, said, look, there's other essential workers that are working in America. It's not a complete and total lockdown for every single person. People are still delivering food and such. And for a bill of this size, and if it's meant to provide relief for these times of crisis, surely all of us House of Representatives can come together and go on the record. So he protests just for a moment in time. And you would have thought he's public enemy number one. Republicans were crying out that he needs to be voted out, primaried. Even President Trump called him a third-rate grandstander. The former Secretary of State, John Kerry, he said Massie needed to be quarantined to prevent the spread of massive stupidity. And so again, what was his crime? He wanted an actual recorded tally for the vote. As the Constitution directs, rather than the anonymous voice vote, as Nancy Pelosi directs. Well, Pelosi got enough people to come into the chamber to, I guess, vote him down or overrule this one congressman who protested. Only one. Nobody in the Senate did. But here was one. And he was figuratively shouted down. The mob didn't like it. Representative Peter King, he was upset, saying that if anyone contracted the illness because they had to step into the chamber, then Massey would have blood on his hands. He was all but saying Massey could be a murderer because he asked for Congress to do their job. But these are not normal times, as Peter Hitchens has said. This is the way it works. Remember, we're on a war footing, and so constitutional norms are suspended. Lockdowns are commonplace. Big Brother decides who's essential, who's not essential. And all of these obscene bailouts, they meet with zero resistance in Congress. You just go along. You nod and go along. No protest. So what about this bill? Well, here's Kimberly Strassel from Friday. It's called the CARES Act, $2.2 trillion. She says a rough calculation suggests the single biggest recipient of taxpayer dollars in this legislation, far in excess of $600 billion, so well over a third, probably, by the time you calculate everything, well over a third of the money in this monstrosity, the biggest bill, the biggest spending package in the history of humankind. It says the single biggest recipient of the taxpayer dollars is government itself. The government. Big government just got a whole lot bigger on Friday. It says this legislation may prove the biggest one-day expansion of government power ever. Did you hear this? It may be the biggest one-day expansion of government power ever. All they needed was the crisis. And listen, they haven't let it go to waste, have they? This was a massive expansion of power. Forget about just the debt. That's part of the problem, too. Well, they mortgage our future away. They rob from our children. That's routine in Congress. But because of a contagion, a virus, a sickness, here they are, hard at work, trying to expand the power of government. Not unlike what's happening here in the UK. This is the United States and Britain. She says more concerning is the extent to which Democrats use the bill to tighten every fiber of the social safety net. Put aside the $260 billion for unemployment benefits, potentially necessary in light of record jobless claims, the bill throws $25 billion more at food stamps and child nutrition, $12 billion at housing, $3.5 billion to states for child care, $32 billion for education, $900 million at low-income heating assistance, $50 million at legal services for the poor, and so on. This is a massive expansion of the welfare state, seemingly with no regard to the actual length of this crisis. It's just indefinite. Her point is, look, where are the caps? Well, we don't know that. These are not normal times. How long does the lockdown go on? It just needs to go on indefinitely. We don't know. So all this funding, billions and billions, how long does that go on? Well, we don't know. This is a crisis. Well, can we at least come together? Can we at least come together and put our vote on record? No! You sit back down. You don't protest any of this. This is crisis work we're doing. This is money for the people. This is the CARES Act. Is this sustainable? And where are we headed? How far will we fall after the resurgence? Look at what we're setting ourselves up for. You can't explain this. You can't explain any of this unless you understand one central pivotal truth that's outlined in the pages of your Bible, the fact that Satan is the god of this world, and that he's deceived. He has deceived the whole world. You see his imprint on everything. Trying to blot out Israel, division in government, division in the nation, a world in confusion and disorder, a world upside down. He's the father of all that, the father of lies, the father of murder and a murderous spirit. He's filled with hatred and rage in his heart. Well, I wanted to conclude with Tom Coburn. He died on Saturday, I think it was, this former senator from Oklahoma. He died of cancer. But he used to sound the alarm for the wild spending that went on in Congress, and a lot of people in Congress hated him for it because he exposed them. We'll have to start tomorrow's program with that. Unless we take a new direction, as we often do on each given day. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.